Welcome to the Real Reel podcast with Natalie Barbu. Instagram might be your highlight reel, but we're here to talk about the real reel. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Real Reel podcast with me, Natalie Barbu. In today's episode, I am interviewing Christine Howell. Christine is actually the owner and designer of Dear Survivor, which is actually a sustainable fashion jewelry brand. What makes Dear Survivor so special is that a percentage of all proceeds goes to the rehabilitation of human trafficking survivors. This is just so important to me. I'm not sure if you guys know this, but human trafficking, sex trafficking, and basically sex slavery is something I am very, very passionate about in terms of organizations that help survivors and victims of these horrific crimes. I actually have been trying to get more involved with Thorn, which is another one of the organizations that's goal is to stop human trafficking. It's just something that I really, really care about, and it's something that I hold deeply inside my heart. So when I heard that Christine is the owner of the sustainable jewelry line, that this is their mission and this is who they are helping, I just had to take this interview, and I was so excited for her to be on my podcast and to hear not only about how she started a business, but how she started a business doing something that she's really passionate about that helps others. Because yes, it's all great to start a business. Of course, I'm all for that. You guys know from my episodes, but this one is just super special because she's actually doing really, really good things and it has such a purpose. And we talk about a lot about starting this business, why she decided to choose this specific cause, what led her to choose this cause, and then also kind of talking about her major in school and what she wishes she would have done and what she wishes people would have told her, and then also how her small business is being affected by COVID-19, because this was a virtual interview, of course, and I just really wanted to know the inside scoop from her about how this pandemic is affecting her business. So I highly recommend you guys check out Dear Survivor. I think that this conversation with Christine is just going to be an amazing, amazing episode. I'm really excited for you guys to hear it. And I just wanted to thank you guys also for all of the reviews and the sweet comments from all of the previous podcast episodes. They are never forgotten. I did want to shout out the reviewer of the week this week. And this one was really, really nice. It like made me really happy reading this podcast review. She said, "I literally have tried so many different podcasts and they just weren't for me. This is everything. I listen to it while I do my work or clean. The content and people are so very inspirational. I also have to applaud Natalie for her ability to move the episode forward in an interesting way. She asks the right questions and it feels like I'm sitting there having a natural conversation. My favorite part about this podcast is the fact that it shows that everyone, and I mean like everyone, has a story to tell." That is exactly what I'm trying to hope for when doing this podcast, that everyone does have a story to tell. You don't have to have a million followers. You don't have to have a bunch of subscribers. You don't have to be famous. You don't have to even like be super, super successful or whatever that means to whoever is listening. I just want to hear your story. I think everyone has a story to tell, and I am so happy that in this episode I'm highlighting Christine's. Anyways, I hope that you guys enjoy, and let's get into the episode. Hi, Christine. Thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me. So excited to chat.
So we are going to get started with setting the record straight. So this is just where I say some assumptions or stereotypes, and then you're going to set the record straight and tell me if they're true or false.
Cool.
The first one is, you need a lot of money to start a fashion brand.
That is definitely false. My story, I actually started with only $800. I got a tax return back in 2015. And I had always wanted to do something in fashion, but just very like spontaneously and quickly decided to just kind of go for it. I just was like, I think in my head, like I wasn't thinking that far in advance of like, oh, I'm going to start this brand that I'm going to do for years. It was just a matter of, I wonder if I can double my tax return and maybe have like $1,600 within the next like 2 months, like just based on things that I'm able to make. And that just like kind of led, like one thing led to the next. And like, before you know it, I'm like 5 years into my business right now because of that $800 investment that I gave to myself and allowed myself to be creative with, and, invested in my own creative skills. So having money definitely helps to start, but like to start, you can be so scrappy at the beginning and just kind of, really go for it.
That's awesome that it was your tax return also. So it's something that anyone can
totally start with. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was thankfully, because I was working at that time, I was working in LA as a seamstress for another company. And truthfully, I was making very little money, very, very small amount of money. So that was like the entirety of my taxes for the year was given, like the, what I had paid in taxes was given back. And so, yeah, I was like, okay, cool. Why not? And I mean, since then I actually haven't had a tax return because I've been self-employed this whole time since then, but you know, it was so great when I had that. And I love that I was able to do that with it.
Yeah, I think that's a really cool way to start your business is by doing something like that. Yeah. And the next one is human trafficking does not happen in the United States.
Very false. Very, very false. I think, I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, just in the last few years, there's been much more attention given to this issue and evidence coming out about how, I mean, human trafficking is worldwide and human trafficking can look like sex trafficking, like exploiting human beings for sexual reasons, and then also like labor trafficking. So like exploiting people like work hours and yeah, human trafficking is a very broad thing. But yes, unfortunately, human trafficking is alive and thriving in the United States, often in cities that are port cities. So like along the coasts, bigger cities that have like tourism, those are going to all be the hubs. Yeah, it's very unfortunate, but it is very, very real.
Yeah, it's actually something that was brought more to my attention this year. I've just been trying to find organizations that I'm passionate about, things that I want to bring more awareness to with my platform, and yeah. Human trafficking has been one of the top ones. Mm-hmm. I've been donating to some organizations that try to combat awesome. That.
Yeah.
But it's just something that like you don't really think about because no one talks about it. You think it
totally.
So far away, or it doesn't affect you, or it's gone, like that happened years ago, but it's something that's very, very, very prominent today, which is really scary.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the next one is sustainable fashion is too expensive.
I would say false. I would say that one's actually true and false, but it doesn't have to be true. It is possible to be a sustainable brand and not charge through the roof, just based on like choosing to work with different materials that are not the more expensive option. Or, I mean, for me, well, I think in general, like the sustainable fashion movement is becoming associated with privilege and wealth and, being able to purchase things that are more, you know, quality or more, sustainable. But like my hope, because I'm also not someone that has a ton of money, like I want to make sustainable fashion more accessible for anybody and right. Do things that brings the price down and not upcharging because of the label, like, oh, it's sustainable, so you know, we can charge an extra $50 or for that thing. Yeah.
Why do you think it's more expensive? Is it actually more expensive, do you think? Or brands are just kind of using that to their advantage?
I would say it's both. Like there's a lot of things that go into pricing a product, from like manufacturing costs to quantities that you're making. Like obviously like the higher quantities, you're able to typically work with factories to get lower pricing. So yeah, if you're doing things in smaller batch, it is going to be more expensive to actually make the things itself. But then also like material wise. So like, let's say for example, a brand is making a dress. They can either make it out of like a poly blend. So something that has like a plastic derived thread, or they can go with a more organic. So let's say like a fabric that's made from eucalyptus fibers. The eucalyptus fiber is going to be more of an expensive fabric. So like that's where the cost comes from versus working with a poly blend fabric that comes from plastic, which is cheap. And that's why most things these days are made from polyester. And that is cheaper. So like there's definitely two sides of the coin where it's like sustainable fashion. There's so much more intention that goes into a product. Like, so things, the costs do add up. However, I mean, my brand, I work with all like recycled material. So the cost for those things are not going to be nearly as high, because often it's things that would just otherwise be getting thrown away because it's a byproduct of somebody else's production.
Right.
Yeah. So there's definitely like two sides of the coin of, it can definitely get on the more expensive side, but then there are also ways to design sustainably that does not cost an arm and a leg.
And I like what you said about how it does have to do with wealth and privilege as well, or it's kind of associated with that, because it reminds me of like healthy food versus fast food. So healthy food, like salad places, for example, are $15 for a salad versus McDonald's, you can get a meal for $2.
Totally.
So it reminds me of the same thing where it's like, yes, all of these things that are a lot cheaper are so bad for us. So why can't we like make healthier alternatives or more sustainable alternatives at a cheaper price? Because I feel like a salad is very, very inexpensive. Like it's just a few vegetables. Yeah. You know, like if you go to the supermarket and you buy the ingredients, it's not as expensive. So I don't know. I think that's another issue also in itself, but it just reminded me of that as well. And I know that there's different, I guess, like you were saying, there's two sides to it. Like, yeah, those things then rot quicker, they go bad quicker, you know, those things will affect the price. But in general, I feel like it's kind of the same thing with like healthy food options are very expensive, and like sustainability and sustainable products are also very expensive today.
I just wanted to take a quick break to thank TM Soft's White Noise Sleep Sounds for sponsoring today's episode. Are you having trouble sleeping, focusing, or relaxing? If the answer is yes, then TM Soft's White Noise Sleep Sounds podcast has got you covered. This hour-long podcast is made to help you get rid of distractions, reduce stress, relax, and get better sleep. You can listen to the sounds of nature, white noise, relaxing music, and so much more. You can check out the TM Soft's White Noise Sleep Sounds podcast on Spotify or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Yeah, and I think for me, like, I want to be a part of the global movement of making sustainability more of the norm. And part of, you know, being one of the designers that's opening that up for the average customer and not just the people that have more money. Because I think that if it's going to be a part of, you know, our future, which it needs to be, like sustainable fashion just needs to change. And in order for it to change, we need to make it more accessible.
Right. And now tell me a little bit more about yourself. So where you went to school, or did you go to school, and your upbringing?
Yeah. I grew up in Redlands, California, which is about an hour outside of LA. I've always loved anything like art and fashion, like since I was really little. My dad's a full-time artist my whole life. He's a painter. So like I grew up in a very creative home. On the other side of that, my family was like, did not really encourage me to pursue anything creative because they also knew the struggle of being in a creative career. I went to college. I actually was able to get a full ride scholarship based on my academics, which was a huge blessing. I went to San Francisco State University. So yeah, I got to move up to the city and had an amazing time just like jumping right into the world. And I ended up getting my degree in sociology because everyone was like, no, don't do fashion, don't do art. Like,
yeah.
it's not going to get you a career. When it's like looking back, I'm like, those are always the things I've loved the most and like the thing that I inevitably ended up doing. So it's just funny that I didn't actually like study it. And one of my regrets, I wish that I would have just pursued my passion in school.
I was going to ask, do you wish that you majored in those things instead?
Oh my gosh. Cause there's so many like more technical skills that I wish I had, like, especially, yeah, like pattern making. I so badly wish I knew the technical side of like designing a garment or like, there's a lot of things that I'm like, okay, if I could have gone back, which maybe I still think about it all the time, like maybe I will like take some design classes or,
right.
I don't know. I studied sociology because the thing that I knew that I wanted to do, no matter what the career was like, I wanted to help people in some capacity. And sociology just was kind of that thing to, if I wanted to go into like nonprofit or it's just kind of shaping your understanding of the world and the social dynamic. So that's what I majored in. And then I did minor in sculpture. So sculpture is like definitely a big part of my life as well. Yeah, so that's what I studied. And then after I graduated, I moved to LA to work for a nonprofit that was a clothing company working with homeless people on Skid Row. So, because I've always like been fascinated by the intersection of like fashion and social good, being able to like help a people group that are, being able to help people through the sale of an item, to me, has just always been fascinating. And I worked at stores throughout college that were primarily selling goods from social enterprise brands. So that's kind of like, I had been seeing that for a long time and was always inspired by it. I moved to LA and was working there for a couple years, and eventually was like, I had a friend in fashion that was like, hey, you're actually really good at making things. Like, have you thought about, you know, starting your own brand? And I was like, well, no, I'm not qualified. And I think that goes back to like, I didn't study it in school. I feel like I didn't know enough to actually be a business owner. She was like, you know what, you're just try to make a couple of things and see what happens. Like try to come up with a brand name. I locked in my cause, came up with like my first collection, had friends that were starting out as graphic designers, like do a logo. We did like a big photo shoot, got like, you know, Squarespace had just started. So like was able to make a website super fast and easy. It was so like, I like looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how fast that was. Like it just was like, I just went for it. With that $800, that was it. And,
that's amazing. Yeah. That's that $800 and someone that pushes you and someone that motivates you is sometimes all you need. Like really, that's all you need to start.
Just to have someone to like tell you like, hey, you're allowed to do this, I think is huge. Mm-hmm. And I just hadn't really had that before. Anyone like telling me like, you know, your creative dreams actually are realistic. Like you're allowed to, you can pursue this. That was tax season 5 years ago, 2015. So I am 5 years, 5 years into this. And it just still like blows my mind that it actually worked, that I'm still here doing it and like have been able to bring attention and like, donate to the cause that I'm passionate about. I'm just so thankful that I get to do it.
No, I think that's such an incredible story of how you started and how it's ended up. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, what is Dear Survivor? Like how do you describe what Dear Survivor is?
Yeah. Dear Survivor is a sustainable fashion jewelry brand. So, all of my pieces are made from upcycled materials. A portion of all sales goes to a nonprofit that I'm partnered with called Hope, which is a rehabilitation home for women who've been rescued from sex trafficking. And then the third component that I've always also been like equally passionate about is like manufacturing and like making sure that everything is done ethically and providing like a livelihood for the people you work with. As I've grown and tried to like figure out how to scale my business, I strategically have looked for manufacturing partners that was doing more than just like sending stuff blindly to a factory and getting it back. So I'm partnered with another nonprofit called Refugee Artisan Initiative up in Seattle. And yeah, so I just send them all the components to my earrings, and the women who they partner with were all like formerly artisans in their home countries. And yeah, they just are able to work from home, stay at home with their kids, assemble my pieces, and then send it back to me. That's Dear Survivor is ethically made, empowering people and planet through, hopefully something like, a piece of jewelry that you'll want to have for a long time.
And how did you go about finding the company or the manufacturers? So I know that you partner with the refugees. Mm-hmm. How did you even go about finding that? Was it something that was placed on your heart that you wanted to give back to, or did you look up that organization?
Yeah, no, So manufacturing is really wild. And I could like go on and on about it. So I'll try to like be more brief, but I had gone through a few different manufacturing teams last year. There's this great resource. It's called Makers Row, which is a database in the United States for like manufacturers in the US. So like connecting designers like me to some bigger factories, some smaller factories, but everyone is like US based. Which is a great database. So I actually found them through there. They were probably like the third third or fourth people that I had like tried doing trial runs with. So like sending the like sample product, seeing how they did, having them send it back. And the problem that I was having with like the larger manufacturers was the attention to detail that they were giving my product. Things were coming back to me just not up to par, like not up to my standards. Something I'm like, I would never be able to sell this. Like you right. scratched the leather, like you didn't tighten it enough so it's loose and can fall apart. Part of that is because like the way that I design the jewelry that I've created is different. It's not done in the traditional way that fashion jewelry is made. So fashion jewelry, meaning like things that are a cheaper price point, typically like the things you would buy at Forever 21 or like Made Well, just yeah, the jewelry that's not like gold diamonds, it's more alternative materials, more fun, like just different things. So yeah, the stuff that I have created is just a different enough technique to make manufacturers like not know what to do with it, especially because it's leather. I work with all scrap leather from another factory in LA that makes purses. I go to them and like buy up their scrap after they're done cutting the bags out of the leather hides. Anyways, so it's just different enough to make it difficult. And everyone was sending me the things back of either one, they were saying like, sorry, we can't make this product for you, or two, sending it to me and it was terrible. And I was like, no, not going to work. And so when I found Refugee Artisan Initiative, I was like, oh my gosh, these would be the ideal people to work with, because I mean, my goal with this is to just like help as many people as possible through this brand, and sent them the stuff. Like I remember getting it back and being like nervous to open it, because I was like, I really want this to work out and I need to find someone pretty quickly to help me, because I can't keep making everything myself, like at the rate that I'm getting orders. And yeah, I opened it and I started crying because it was like perfect. They were the only people that had like the same attention to detail and care that I was putting into my product. And like, yeah, it was just like such a huge like relief when, yeah, I found them and they're awesome. And they've been able to grow with me, as I've grown, cause they're also like a newer organization and they're growing. And, yeah, so it takes time to find like the right manufacturing partners. It takes a lot of trial and error. It was about 6 months of me like working to find somebody to make it and then finally finding them.
Yeah. And I feel like when you see your product, when you listen to this podcast, you might think like, oh yeah, I want to do something like that, but I just don't have the time or it's going to take forever. But when you put it to like, yeah, it took 6 months, that is a long time. And probably in those 6 months you were getting frustrated, but I think it pays off so much in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm really proud of. Like, I'm really proud of having put in the effort and, yeah, I'm proud of it and I'm thankful. And it's been exciting to see the growth and it opens a lot of doors for me, because I can step into the role more so now as designer rather than being the one making the things all the time. Like, it's allowing me more time to be creative and using my ingenuity to like create new designs.
Right. And how or why did you choose human trafficking as your main cause? Is it something that you were really passionate about from before you started this company, or were you just looking for an organization to support?
Yeah. So I was already very passionate about it when I was in college. So part of the reason I studied sociology, it was probably like 2010. I had just started hearing more about human trafficking in the United States and modern day slavery, like that term. And so like in my sociology classes, that's kind of what I just started to gear my research around, because one, it just fascinated me. And two, I was just in disbelief that it was so prevalent in the United States. And, yeah, so I very early, like years, I guess that was 10 years ago, which is so crazy to me. but I started like researching it a lot and like really looking at the ways that modern consumerism affects human trafficking around the world, with like exploitation and labor, manufacturing, all that. So it was something that I was already very aware of and like very interested in. And then, yeah, when I was in college, I lived in like this beautiful neighborhood in San Francisco, like the picturesque houses that you can think of. We had this like vacant storefront across from us that was like formerly like a salon. And yeah, one day there was just like an open sign and my roommates and I were like, what like what opened? Like there was nothing there. And yeah, it became very clear that it was like an illegal brothel. There would just be like men ringing the doorbell all hours of like day and night waiting to be let in. Someone would like creak open the door and like look to see who they were. And then anyways, it was just very clear. And because I had been studying human trafficking trends, I actually did know what to look for. And I just noticed all these signs. So that was like insane and like heartbreaking, just thinking about like, okay, what's happening across the street? Like, I walked to the police station just a couple blocks away and was reporting it. And they were like, well, you know, we haven't seen this or that. So like, we can't do a raid or blah, 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 all this stuff. And, yeah, all like the reports that I was filing, they were just like, there's not enough evidence. And it ended up taking 2 years to actually get exposed and shut down. And, it was insane. And like all of our neighbors, like we all knew it was happening. The neighbor of that unit was like a little corner store. And the owner of that shop, he was the one that actually finally saw one of the girls with the tattoo on her neck of the woman's name that was like the leader. And so his reporting was the one that finally got it to get shut down because he saw the tattoo. And that was like one of the sure signs. So yeah, that was just like insane because I was like, okay, I actually know what to do in this situation. I know the people to contact. Like, I know the signs of this. Like, I'm the one that should be able to help in some capacity. And just realizing that I couldn't help was like super discouraging. And so yeah, because I also knew, I'm like, okay, I'm an artist. Like, I'm a creative person. I'm not, you know, I'm not in like someone in like law that can actually do some type of structural change or like make a difference in that way. So I had always known like if I ever were to start a business or a brand, like that would be the cause that I was in connection with. Because I really believe that there is so much power in the consumer market to do like positive, beautiful things in the world or really exploit people and our planet. And it's a powerful place and you can do a lot of good through it if you build your business with that intention. So yeah, from day one, when my friend had been like, you know, think of a brand, come up with a name. As soon as like she gave me that challenge, like all the wheels started turning in my brain of like, oh my gosh, like I can call it Dear Survivor. I can, you know, tie in like my passion for human trafficking and also making sure that all of the materials I work with are ethically made and manufacturing is good. And yeah, so that's kind of all how it came about.
I'm going to take a quick break to tell you guys about our sponsor. You guys all know what Spotify is, but on Spotify, you can listen to all of your favorite artists and podcasts in one place for free. So you do not need to have a premium account. Spotify has a huge catalog of podcasts on every topic, including the one that you're listening to right now. On Spotify, you can follow your favorite podcast so you never miss an episode. Premium users can download episodes to listen to offline wherever you are. And you can also easily share what you're listening to with your friends on Instagram. So if you're listening to this ad right now, you should take a pause and share your podcast, or share my podcast, I should say, on your Instagram story and let other people know where to find it. If you haven't done so already, be sure to download the Spotify app, search for The Real Real Podcast on Spotify, or browse podcasts in your library tab. Also, make sure to follow me so you never miss an episode of The Real Real Podcast.
That's just so sad to me, though, at how long it took for the storefront across the street from you to get shut down. Because yeah, you know that's not the only one in this country.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. And even like in San Francisco, when that happened, like this news article came out about it. Because at that point, I had actually already moved to LA. But my roommates were still living there and they were like giving me all the updates. But yeah, it was like a sex trafficking ring. That was all, they were able to bust all of them at once in the city. And that was one of them. But the crazy part was that it actually like didn't get fully shut. It got like shut down. But the people running it were never like properly, I don't know. They were still renting the place. Since then, like things have like picked up again. And part of the reason for that was because back then, maybe things have changed now, but there was only two Vice, so it's called, I'm pretty sure it's called Vice police officers in San Francisco that were like specifically the ones like handling human trafficking. And there was just too much and there wasn't enough capacity to like do something about it. Yeah, it's just so heartbreaking.
That is so sad. But you know, I think it's like crazy that that's something you were studying and then it happened right in front of your eyes. Like that is
so crazy. Like, yeah, it was like insane. And I don't know if I saw it because I was aware, or like, I don't know if my roommates would have noticed something if I hadn't been like, guys, are you watching this thing happen across the street? Like, what's going on? But yeah, it definitely was one of those like life altering things for me, and something I just couldn't ignore. Like, you can't see that and then just be like, okay, yeah, like the world's great. It's like, no, we all need to do something. This is what I've been exposed to. This is my life experience, and like, how am I going to move forward in light of that? And how can I use my voice and my skills to hopefully help something?
Yeah, I know. And I know that you said that you're hoping, or you said that fashion and consumerism, you can either be contributing to the exploitation or you can be helping with consumerism. So do you see that shift in fashion specifically? That do you think more brands are gearing towards that, gearing towards being more sustainable and also just making wiser decisions and more impactful decisions? Or do you think it's kind of just like a trend right now, but it'll go away?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes to both of those things. Like, I think amazingly, there's this global movement to change how fashion is done. I mean, this week is actually Fashion Revolution Week, which is this year is the 7-year anniversary of Rana Plaza, which was the factory in Bangladesh that collapsed and like killed thousands of like women who were working there making clothes for like Walmart and JCPenney, like those type of like more fast fashion brands. So that's this week, like kind of, and since then, in the last 7 years, there has been a huge shift towards doing things better. Like customers are becoming more aware of the effects of fast fashion, of the environmental impact and the social impact that cheap clothing is having. So yes, I think that things are moving forward in a really positive way. However, the trend sustainable fashion is becoming so widely used that like it's starting to lose its meaning. Bigger fast fashion brands are saying like, here's our sustainable line, and it's like, what's actually sustainable about it? You have like 2% of eucalyptus fiber, but the rest is, you know, a polyester. So there's a lot of greenwashing happening, and I don't know, there's like it's discouraging. But I mean, right now, I mean, you know, where the world is shut down because of the coronavirus, and the entire fashion community is kind of looking at taking this moment and being like, okay, what can we collectively change in the future? Because so much of manufacturing has just completely halted around the world. I'm hopeful. There's a lot of conversations going around of like, okay, this is like a time for our industry to collectively change and do better moving forward. So I'm hopeful. Like, I'm really hopeful that that will be the case. And I am afraid that a lot of the smaller businesses that are part of the big change happening, this is a really hard time to be a small business owner, to be a designer. I'm afraid that a lot of brands will not be able to survive this, which is heartbreaking. But I'm hopeful because, I don't know, I'm an optimist. So I think that this season of life will hopefully be a catalyst for positive change in fashion.
Yeah, I completely agree. And how have you been with the COVID-19 situation? How has your survivor been doing?
Oh, it's crazy. Like, I still just can't even believe the situation when I like actually think about it. Like, I've definitely got into a routine. Like, I'm in California, so like I've been working from home for like 5 or 6 weeks now. Because my office is in downtown San Diego in a building full of jewelers and a lot of old people. So I was like, okay, I think we should all just go home and work. My business is primarily wholesale. Like, I work with a lot of like boutiques and things all across the country. So that's about like 70-80% of my business, and that's all gone right now because all like retail shops are basically closed. I've taken like a huge hit. But I've always, I mean, it's the ironic part is beginning of this year, I was like, okay, my 2020 goal is like become more direct consumer, like online sales, grow that. And now it's like, just like kind of like a funny joke to me. Cause I'm like, oh, now we're there. Like we are like forced to be doing that. Getting more creative with like how to be like a direct consumer brand. I have the things that I have changed. I'm doing more one of a kind pieces, like weekly launches that are, unique things. I'm doing cast jewelry as well. So like I'll make sculptural wax forms, and then my caster, he just got back into the studio. So like we're able to like keep producing stuff, which is wild because so much of manufacturing is just done right now and not a lot of brands are able to put out new product. Just adapting and figuring out what to do right now, but we're surviving, like we're gonna get through. I have a lot of determination, and yeah, I'm about to, like June 15th is my 5-year anniversary as a brand, so I'm like, we're gonna make it, like gotta get through, like I'm not going down now. So it's just shifting a lot of things and like scaling back where I can and being nimble, and yeah, but just so unexpected, like gosh, it's just a crazy situation. But overall, I'm just thankful for a lot of things.
And also the power of social media, I feel like, is huge right now with online sales and with getting your name out there. So
yeah,
I do hope that a lot of small businesses kind of take advantage of that if they haven't in the past, because I know a lot of businesses still might not be on social media, but I think now it's kind of eye-opening that is something that you kind of need to be on, which is crazy that something like this has halted manufacturing and production, because it's something that never in a million years you would have thought would shut down.
Yeah, it's wild.
And I wanted to ask you one last question. What is your best advice to someone who wants to create a company that has a mission, that makes an impact, that isn't just to sell, just to make money, something that is giving back?
Totally. Gosh, best advice. I mean, I think I sit down with a lot of people who come to me and are like, oh, I want to do something like you're doing. The thing that I always tell people is like, you just have to do it. Like you just have to start. You can think about it for so long. You can dream about it, but like you actually just need to start. You just need to do something. And I'm so thankful that I had that friend years ago be like, you know, just go for it, come up with a name. And, cause I think that if I had really like sat down to plan out this full like grand scheme of like, I'm going to start a business and this is my goal and this is my dream of this is who I want to connect with. And I think I would have been halted with a lot of fear of like, oh, I could never do that. Like I can't make much of a difference. I don't have any money. Like I can't start something. I think my biggest piece of advice to anyone is just like, if you have a dream, if you have like a brand that you want to start, if you have a cause that you're passionate about, you just need to start something. It can be super small. It can be a really small endeavor, and you can just kind of see where it takes you. But I think, yeah, the biggest thing is to just go for it, especially because I feel like we know ourselves pretty well. Like when I look back at my life, I'm like, I've always loved the same things. Like I've always been into the same things in my life. And like, why did I ever, you know, going to college, like why did I doubt who I was? And so if you're passionate about something, if you really love something, like I think it's really worth it to pursue it. And to like not live in the fear of like what ifs, but.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I think so many people are so scared about like they have to have a 12-page business plan. They have to think about their 5-year and 10-year projections. And I'm just like, no, I know some people are going to be like, no, you need a business plan. I don't think so. I think it actually holds a lot of people back.
Yes. Just
take the first step and start, and you will figure it out along the way. Because I guarantee if you make a business plan, it's going to change the second you start your company.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's like, and I don't know if that's just like a shift in, you know, generations. Cause I remember I had like older people telling me like, oh, you know, you're good at like make a business plan, like come up, you know, you have to write this thing. Like this is traditionally how you do it. And I was like, oh gosh, that sounds so boring. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I think that our generation is more like, okay, we have the internet and we have so much potential to just like start making things and start doing things and we don't have to do things in the traditional way of planning necessarily, or I don't know.
Right. And things change quickly. Like, yes. I think that by the time you're done with your business plan, also something might have changed. Like,
so, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. It's best to just like go with the flow and see what you need to pivot, when you need to pivot,
and be
on top of it. Like, I think that is the number one thing.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Well, Christine, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. I would love to have all of your links in the show notes. So where can they find you and where can they find Dear Survivor?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Dear Survivor. And my website is dear-survivor.com. I recently also started a YouTube channel where I go into more of like small business ownership and like things I'm learning and dealing with. Lots of things. I think YouTube is just at Dear Survivor too. So you can find me there.
Awesome. I have to check out your videos.
I'm new. Don't.
Oh, that's like, perfect. Don't be too critical. I love following any small business owner, entrepreneur. Like, I don't care. Like, I just love following all.
That's cool.
So.
Yeah. Well, they're fun. I'm having fun with it. It's a new venture.
Perfect. Well, thank you again so much. I love what you're doing with Dear Survivor, and I think it's helping out so many women, and it's making such an impact in the world. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
I hope that you guys enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please be sure to give it 5 stars on iTunes. That really means a lot to me, and it's a great way to help people discover my podcast. I'd also love to know what your thoughts were on this on the Instagram page or on the Facebook page. So please let me know your thoughts, but thank you guys again for listening. It always means so much to me when I see that you guys are listening and posting it on your story. Please know that those do not ever go unseen. But anyways, thank you again, and I'll see you guys next week on Monday. Yes, on Monday, with another episode of The Real Real Podcast. We'll